favor. This is the first meeting in February of the Oceana Community Services District Board. Marie, can I ask you for a roll call or Celia?
Director Guerrero?
Present.
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Blackburn?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Lucy?
Present. Okay, can I get everybody to participate in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You know, we've gotten better at that. Okay, great. Let's look at item number four, agenda review. Do we have any changes? Does the staff have any changes they'd like to add?
President Lucy, we do. There's two consent agenda items, and in both of them relating to will serve letters, the staff report indicates that there is an attached will serve letter to send to the property owners. That attachment was not included in the agenda package, so it's being introduced into the record right now. All board members have a copy of it, and there's also copies available for the public. And the recommendation then is to see whether or not any members of public during public comment on the consent agenda have concerns due to the omission of that item. One of the property owners had indicated that it's his last thing that he needs to do in order to be able to proceed with his development, and is hoping that it still is considered and approved by your board today. But those things are now added into the record and available for the public as well.
Okay, so if nobody minds, I'd like to handle it this way, that if there's any opposition from the audience, then we'll take and pull it and table it. If there's no opposition from the audience, then I'll leave it under the consent, and we'll just pass it as a consent item. Because I don't want to hold up people's projects. That was my concern.
And perhaps during this item four on agenda review, if any individuals in the public do have concerns, that they might even speak at this time.
Right, correct. Okay. So on that note, item number five, if there's anything that's not on the agenda that the community would like to speak to, now would be the time to do it. This is when you don't have to stay in the box. You can just talk about whatever you want.
We need to move to approve the agenda.
Oh,
I'll move
okay.
to approve it.
Second.
Okay.
Mr. Minnery's weighing in.
Just so I'm following on, I thought my understanding was that you were going to ask if there was any anyone in the public right now that has a concern about these items. They could speak now. We could, before you adopt
okay.
the agenda, we could then move those items during the agenda review if there is anybody concerned about that.
Okay, I get it. All right.
Oh, and I was under the impression that we would take that under consent public comment.
Any way you want to do it.
Okay,
anyway.
So do you want to move number nine up? Because I think that kind of complicates the situation.
Okay.
So if anybody wants to speak on the consent items, okay. such as there's no attachment, right,
yes.
and I'm at a loss, then they would do it there.
So we're going to take
okay?
Either way, I was just trying to track what you were saying.
So are we taking the consent agenda out of order then?
No.
Okay. All right.
We're not.
I understand.
What we're doing, I'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda with the stated changes.
I'll make a motion. Second.
Okay. So, Marie, may we get a roll call vote on that, please?
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes. Okay. So, on that note, is there anybody that would like to talk about anything?
That's kind of quiet. That's scary.
Hi, Sherry.
Shirley,
excuse me. Either way.
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. And I just wanted to go on record as saying that I voted for Karen White, and I supported her running for the board, and I didn't contribute to her campaign, but I did buy her an iced tea once. And I just want to say that I can disagree with the board on certain subjects, but I can still support them. And I just appreciate all the work you do And I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gibson.
All right. Is there anybody else that'd like any comment or concerns or things we should consider in the future or now?
Gary Peterson, Halcyon.
Hi.
And a longtime resident. I just see what you do as an excellent job and a thankless one. And want to thank you for what you do.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I really appreciate that. Whew. I know.
Uh-oh.
I'm so used to
look out, here it comes.
Ducking and dodging.
Linda Austin from Oceano. And I just want to remind everyone the pancake breakfast is not this coming Sunday, but the following Sunday. I put flyers there for everybody. I know most of you are already coming, so, and I want to let everybody else know. And I also, too, want to thank you all for what you do for the community and the staff and everything. We're very proud of this board, and I just want to go on record, like Shirley and the rest of them, how much we appreciate you.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Mrs. Austin. And I'd like to say, Mr. Basti, is he a chief or captain?
He retired.
Commander. So, Mr. Basti, the retired commander, makes the pancakes and the sausages and the eggs, and the man can throw down. I go hungry before I go to the pancake breakfast, so I strongly encourage everybody to go to the pancake breakfast.
I have my tickets.
I got mine.
I'll be there.
Okay. So, moving on that note, is there anything else that people would like to add or put in? Okay, great. Special presentations. Well, this is a special one because we have Mario, who we don't hear from Mario very often. He works in the front desk. If people have called in and stuff, they usually talk to Mario or Celia. And so it's nice that Mario's up here presenting on some of the important stuff that he does for the community. Thank you very much, Mario, and I'll turn the floor over to you.
Good evening, board. My name is Mario De Leon. I'm here to talk about our Clean and Green program that we've been working on for the last few months.
Take your cue, Mr.
So it dates back to our ordinance 1999-1, establishing rules and regulations for the collection and disposal of solid waste and rubble. So I'm going to talk a little about the process of the abatement that I go through. First of all, I verify the location of the solid waste and rubble. I take pictures with a date stamp. I create letters and I post notices. Then I take pictures that are posted notice and a date stamp. Send out return receipt letters to property owners. Property owners need to comply within 10 days. Compliance by owners can get extension if needed. Non-compliance owners still will be charged at their own expense, and the trash company will pick up the trash. And then I send out a thank you postcard to all owners that comply. So to the right of you see the pictures that with the mm-hmm. date stamp and post notices for the trash that's around the community. So I'm going to show you some before and after pictures of some property. And this was actually like a hidden spot that's behind three properties in an alley towards the beach area. So you can see that there's a lot of trash. And when I posted that notice, owner was on it, took care of it, needed extension, out-of-state owner. She was really, they complied with it, so that worked out great. So there's some other pictures of some stuff that's in the alleys behind people's property. Here's another one that was in the beach area in the alleys. There's actually three pictures that are to the side of it. Different views of the garbage that actually built out to the alley. As soon as I posted those notices, they were on it. They cleaned it up in a timely manner within the 10 days, so they're really good at it. So it came out really clean. And some more alley pictures of the alley. What do we find in the alleys? Random garbage, people just dumping random things. It's not necessarily property owners. It's just people going through the alleys and dropping trash. And then this is the side of the properties, like on the streets. Mm-hmm. So 22nd Street and 23rd Street, they're like hot spots in the community where people could just drive through the community and just drop trash off on the side of the road. So take care of that. And then in front of the street, this was after actually the cleanup in Oceano. People were just putting trash in front of their property, expecting the garbage company to pick it up without even complying that they thought they were going to pick it up. So we posted a notice, and they cleaned it up right away. So there's some more hot spots. You can see the couches in the front. People, this is actually 22nd also. People just dropping couches, tires at a rent in someone's property, which is not really well for the property owner. They weren't really too happy, but you know, they cleaned it up in a timely manner also. So, so the corner of the alleys, random spots, people just leaving trash, moving out, just leaving their trash out wherever so someone else can pick it up. So. And here's our non-compliance with our abatement. We had 98% compliance with the property owners, which is a good thing.
That's great.
2% non-compliance. So if you see to the side, 34 owners complied, one owner non-compliant, a total of 35 posted notice abatements. And then when it comes to the property management, when the people owning the properties, property management, we just call the property management, let them know you got some garbage out in the front, and they get on with their tenants, and they take care of it right away. So we don't really have to post notices to them. It's just a verbal conversation, and we work together with them, and they comply with us. So most property owners understand they have to clean up the garbage and are willing to do so. Some disagree because it was left there by someone unknown. So OCSD owns 14 trash cans around the community. They are located in various locations on Highway 1, Beach Street area, around Oceano Elementary School, along Pier Avenue, on Railroad, and on Air Park. So you can see there's different kind of garbage cans all throughout the community that people can actually use that we have set out there for the community. So concerns of the property owners. Behind the fence and alley, unknown, solid waste and rubbish, vacant lots, out-of-town owners, side of property, homeless trash on the property, not their trash, abandoned by the unknown. Why do we have to pay for someone else's trash? Owners shouldn't have to put up a fence on the vacant lots. And how can we as a community prevent this? And then property owner suggestions. They suggest signs, no dumping, Penal Code 374.3. Can you, to the right, you can see actually one of the property owners put his own dumping sign up on the fence because he tends to be a hot spot. His fence is kind of hidden behind other people's fences. They're asking for reduced rates when owners clean up trash that's dumped by others. Working with vacant lot owners to find a way so they are not targeted as hot spots. More advertising on special per pickup days. Asking for a needed location in town to drop bigger ticket items. Example, couches, washers, dryers, fridge, tables, dressers for a lower cost not belonging to the owners. Adding more trash cans around the community and refurbishing and maintaining the ones that we already have out there. And so we've been working together as a team to keep Oceano clean and green. So that's what we've been doing around the district. So thank you.
Thank you, Mario.
Thank you, Mario. Yeah.
Do you guys have any questions?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I did have mine fenced off so they can't get in it now.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you have anything you want to add?
I have a question for Mario.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Is there any teeth in the ordinance if somebody doesn't comply? What happens? How does it escalate?
So if someone doesn't comply, I give them 10 days, and I try to communicate with them, verbal conversations, sending out letters. The way that the ordinance states that we have to give them 10 days, if they don't comply, then we call the garbage company, we have them pick it up, and then we bill them. So we had one of them that didn't comply. They argue a lot about it, and they want to figure out a way, and I work with them as much as I can to give them time, work with the garbage company, calling them up, giving them more time to pick it up in a timely manner. Sometimes it takes more than 10 days, but if they call me and they comply with it, and they give a little bit of argument, because I understand that it's not their garbage that's in the alley, but someone did leave it there, but technically it's still their property, and they have to keep it clean at all times.
Right.
So the non-compliance, I've really had just one person, and that we just had the garbage company come pick it up, and that's what it says. So,
if I might add, so in this case, where then if we bill an individual, and if they don't pay, then the ordinance provides that, then we can notice them, and it would be put on your board's agenda. And what your board can then do is have it added to the property tax bills next year. So that's the last step in compliance.
Great.
I have a question. This does not involve automobiles, right? There's a different process for abandoned vehicles.
Abandoned vehicles, yes. We would contact the highway patrol for the abandoned vehicles.
Okay, and they take care of that?
And they would take care of that.
Do they take care of it?
Yes, we had actually one off of Fountain, and we called the highway patrol and let them know there was an abandoned vehicle over there, and they took care of that.
Thank you.
What about abandoned cars that are on the streets?
If it's been there for a certain amount, I think it was 72 hours.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This one house in particular, I know they have four cars.
Your mic's off, Mary.
That there are four cars that don't run, and because some of them are covered with tarps and some aren't, but they're parked on the street.
So if it's a nuisance, they would call us, and then we can contact Highway Patrol, and the Highway Patrol would go out there and do their investigation to see if it's within their standards.
Okay, and then let me ask you one more question as well. So if you take a property that's obviously gotten out of control, and they loaded everything into a trailer and clean up the property, and they move the trailer onto the street, how would you handle that?
Well, there was actually one that they actually moved the trailer onto the street.
Oh, I'm so surprised.
It didn't belong to the owners actually of that property, so they took it out. They contacted, when I talked to the owner, he said he contacted the owner of the trailer full of garbage. He said, we're putting it on the street, and either you're going to come pick it up or someone's going to tow it away because it didn't belong to them, and they just stored it on their property, and it was full of garbage itself. So it's not there no more that I noticed, so...
Okay.
I want to double-check on that.
President Lucy, so there was another example where like a recreational vehicle had burned, and it was a pretty bad situation. And when a situation gets that extensive, then we coordinate with code enforcement, with county planning, and county sheriff as well. There's certain situations where I don't want our staff to get on site in a situation that might be kind of tense. And so we did have one where we coordinated with the sheriff and code enforcement, and in essence, sheriff and code enforcement ended up taking care of that one.
Right. And I do remember that particular case, and several community members worked on that and were thoroughly exhausted. And at that time, there was a different supervisor who was so proud of herself that she had gone to the area where the trailer was, and we're thinking, it's in our neighborhood. Come on, lady. But that took a lot of effort to do that coordination between Highway Patrol, the state police, or sheriffs, and all those. So
yeah, and in those situations,
it's a challenge, but we don't want to put the staff at risk.
Yeah, usually there's a story, a bigger story behind those situations, too.
Right.
And sheriff and code enforcement are best to handle those.
Yeah.
The men with the guns.
So is there anything we can do to make your job a little bit more helpful? Or is there anything we can do for you?
Supporting us. That's
okay,
it.
Great.
As a community, if you guys have anything out there that you guys see, feel free to call me. I'll go check it out.
And what number would people reach you at, Mario?
805-481-6730.
6730.
And that's the office phone.
Okay, great.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks
guys.
A lot.
Yeah,
thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, Mario.
Thanks for your presentation.
Good work.
Yeah. Making a difference.
Fine.
All right. So, do we have Commander Donovan in the house from the Sheriff's Department? No? Okay. Well, one of us from the neighborhood could give a report. No. Okay, and our dearly loved Five Cities Fire Authority.
Chief.
I'm not very good at the chiefs and the commanders and the battalions and all that stuff. So.
Neither is my wife. She refuses for all the right reasons.
And I was raised Navy.
Good evening, Chair and Board. Steve Lieberman, I'm your fire chief. I'm also accompanied by Battalion Chief Ricky Heath this evening. Wanted to give you a brief update on activity year to date. We run a total of 294 calls within the Five Cities Fire Authority jurisdiction. Of that 294, 81 have been out of the Oceano Station. As you know, we instituted boundary drops some time ago, so those calls from the Oceano Station could be going into Grover Beach or Arroyo as well, and vice versa from the other two. Just to give you a recap, Station 1, which is Arroyo Grande, 108 calls during this period. Station 2, located in Grover Beach, 105. Again, Station 3, right here, 81, for a total of 294. In terms of automatic and mutual aid responses, we've run 39 so far this year, which is 13%. Last year, at the end of the year, we were about 14% of automatic and mutual aid. If you have any questions, I'd love to take a shot at answering them.
Are we doing any mutual aid on the beach?
No. Anymore? We're currently off the beach.
Okay.
Had a conversation with Kevin Pierce with State Parks last month, and I'm waiting to hear back from a conversation he's going to have with Brent Marshall regarding our future as to whether we will go back to the beach or not. The patrol is currently still out of service, in need of repair, and we want to get some closure from State Parks.
And is that beach area, is there coverage? Is the state providing coverage?
So State Parks personnel are trained medically to either the emergency medical responder or EMT level like our folks. Cal Fire out of Station 22 on the Mesa adjacent to the refinery also has a paramedic four-wheel drive unit that responds to the beach as needed. And then they're supported by air ambulances as required as well. From a fire suppression perspective, the patrol did have fire suppression capabilities beyond a fire extinguisher that they're carrying now. And that's all I can share with you.
Do you know if the quality of services or the time response time is being decreased now that we're not able to respond?
I think the easy answer would be yes, the response time from a fire rescue perspective. Mm-hmm. Certainly there's a difference because, again, that unit's coming from Station 22 off the Mesa. From Cal Fire. But again, talking to Kevin Pierce, with the majority of their incidents, many of them being EMS related, mm-hmm. and along with San Luis Ambulance having a four-wheel drive ambulance, I didn't get a sense that there was a lot of concern that we weren't responding to the dunes.
Okay.
Maybe you go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was hopeful that after we weren't going to the beach anymore, the automatic mutual aid calls outside of the district would be reduced, and it doesn't look like they are.
Great question. They certainly are in terms of beach response, but just driving over here this evening, we had units going into Pismo Beach across Five Cities, drive 4th Street to help out Cal Fire, also going to the urgent care in the Oak Park Orchard Supply Hardware Shopping Center, and then, of course, eastbound into the unincorporated areas outside of Arroyo Grande are still areas that were requested.
Thank you.
Maybe you could just clarify something for me really quickly, is that if they have a four-wheel drive ambulance, right, I see when there's a problem down on the beach and somebody's become ill, that the ambulance will back up at the ramp.
Yeah, they don't go down.
Not the ambulance, but the EMT will back up to the ramp and load into the ambulance.
Yeah. Prior to having this position with the Fire Authority, I was the Emergency Medical Services Director for the county, and I'm very familiar with the San Luis Ambulance contract. And operationally, what works for them is that four-wheel drive unit, you don't want to take it. If a patient had to go to San Luis Obispo to the trauma center, for example, you really don't want that leaving this area in case there's another call. So what they'll do is the crew of two will split. One will drive the four-wheel drive ambulance, and the other will drive the two-wheel drive conventional ambulance, leave the conventional ambulance at the ramp. They'll go do the rescue, bring the patient, and transfer them into a traditional ambulance so the four-wheel drive can stay in service here in the South County.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Is it also because the four-wheel drive is safer on the beach than the freeway?
Say yes. It's got big tires, and it's lifted with a relatively narrow wheelbase in proportion.
Does it have a little whippy antenna, too?
It has that cool antenna, yes.
Okay, great.
Thanks, I have lighted ones if they want one.
If you have lighted ones, all right.
Is there anybody from the audience that has any questions for the commander? Chief? No? Okay, great. I want to thank you for coming out tonight.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a great meeting.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Chief.
All right, moving right along. And Mr. Maraschino. Our field director.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maraschino. So we've had 12 work orders in the past 2 weeks, 7 USAs, 13 customer service calls. We finished up exposing all the piping for Well 5 for future. Well 5 is going to get back online here shortly, within the next few months. So everything's exposed. We understand what all the piping's doing inside the yard, get a good idea of that. Finished up a few jobs that we had some line breaks, did some weed abatement, continuing with Well 8, getting that on track here shortly. So we've been fairly busy with Wells 5, 8, and weed abatement, and buttoning up jobs that we had a few lines break.
Wow.
Yeah.
Any word on the truck yet? I keep asking.
No word.
No truck.
Probably your mic's off.
I did call again, but we still don't. By the purchase order, I believe it's March 2nd or March 3rd that the delivery commitment is. Called again today to remind them.
Where are they located?
Riverside, San Bernardino area.
Ah, easy drive.
Very easy.
Mary and I will head down there.
Sounds good.
We'll jump on the bike and head on down. Okay, great. Thanks, Tony.
Thank you.
Is there any messages you'd like for the community to help in anything? Fog program?
Keep generator, Well 8, any of that stuff.
You know, anything like that?
Not at this time. Everything's going pretty good.
And people are conserving the best of their abilities?
Absolutely. They are conserving.
Okay, great.
Yes.
I heard of this great conservation program the other day, and I immediately joined it. And it's coming out of Ventura, and it's Don't Wash Your Car.
You started that program. You didn't need to join
it. I'm going for the dirtiest car in San Luis Obispo.
I'll win. Works.
I'll tie you up.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Tony.
Thank you, Tony.
Okay, moving right along. Mr. Ogren, you want to talk to us, or do you want the directors to check in first?
The directors. I'm not on the list of outside committees because I have not had a Zone 3 committee meeting since our last board meeting.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So Zone 3 meets every other month, and my next meeting will be in March.
Okay, great. So we'll start with, let's start at Matt's end of the table.
All right.
How you doing there, Mr. Guerrero?
Doing well, thank you.
Good.
I want to report about the South County Sanitation District meeting. I did appear
Hold
at...
Hold on to your horses.
Fasten your seatbelts. I did appear at that last week. I think it's probably not a surprise to people that there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of information going out, but there's been a lot of community involvement with the South County Sanitation District, and I appreciate that. I do appreciate everybody that's come out, and I think we've cleared up a lot of the ideas with misinformation that have come out. We've had to address and gone back and address things that have been really addressed over the last couple of years regarding insurance and some of these other sorts of things. I hope that they've been cleared up. But we had a very good presentation 2 meetings ago from Shannon Sweeney about after we changed leadership at the district. And I joined that board in 2012. In 2013, we changed management, administration, and engineering contracts. And if everybody will remember, this may ring a bell because it's been 2 years and maybe people have forgotten, that at that time we were losing anywhere from $600,000 to $800,000 a year negative that were coming out of reserves. Now we're putting in the bank, that the swing is we're putting in the bank about $1 million a year. So instead of losing $600,000 or $800,000 a year, we're now putting $1 million a year into the bank. More importantly, the plant is running more efficiently, and there's a couple of things that have happened. Of the 10 employees that existed, 7 are new, including the chief plant operator, John Clemens. The administration is all new. We have we had an interim general manager, it was Paul Karp. Now we have Rick Sweet. That is new. And new engineers, and that is being handled by Shannon Sweeney. And so I think it's been helpful for people from the public who have come out to hear this, to hear this information, to find out that it has been 2 years that we've been working on this, and we've had some very positive results, again, with the plant performing well. There were a couple of key things that we discovered in speaking with staff. We is not the right word because it wasn't me, but that the staff discovered and they implemented. And one of the things was the second clarifier that was built around 1996. Mm-hmm. Turns out we may not need it. It's good for redundancy, but the plant that has two clarifiers is now running on just one, and they're going back and forth one at a time because so whatever it is in the treatment process, this being a biological treatment process, whatever it is that was going on was causing the numbers, the TSS and the BOD numbers, biological oxygen demand and total suspended solids numbers, to be higher than they needed to be. And so they've reduced back to using just one clarifier. One of the advantages of that is there's two distinct advantages. One of them is that the ocean outfall, the product that's going out the ocean outfall is cleaner. Which is the main advantage. The second advantage is that it's saving about $5,000 per month in electricity. Mm-hmm. And so when they instituted, and I want to say it was around 2006, 2007, before my time, but it was somewhere around there, they got a cogen, it might have been 2010, they got a cogeneration unit, which was something that was supposed to take the methane gas, convert it into electricity, and then help run the plant. It worked well for a short time. And then we ended up in litigation with the company for fraud, breach of contract, breach of implied warranty, because it failed. And that unit is no longer at the plant even. And the company that had sold that to us is out of business now. And they're being pursued by other entities as well. And the problem that we ran into is being a fly-by-night company, or appearing to be a fly-by-night company, they weren't insured and they were inadequately capitalized. And so recovery from them is, you know, blood from a turnip. So those are two big things that happened. But there was a report, again, 2 weeks, two meetings ago was a report by Shannon Sweeney. This week we had a report by John Clements. And John Clements talked about all the projects that happened during 2014. And he gave a lengthy report. And I just want to highlight it. I don't want to spend 20 minutes going through what he did. We installed a dual gas boiler, and so what this does is, it instead of capturing the methane to make electricity, the methane is being captured to heat water because it's part of the treatment process, and that has taken our gas bill from a little over $2,000 a month to what we pay at a residential unit, which is probably around $60 or $80 a month. PG&E is about $2,000 a month in savings. PG&E was so concerned, they thought something was wrong with their gas meter, and they came out twice to check it. And it turns out nothing was wrong with the gas meter. We were just capturing the gas and using it in a different way.
PG&E or Southern Cal Gas?
Oh, who's
Edison.
The gas? Edison. I'm sorry.
No, Southern Cal Gas.
Same thing.
See, I'm going to be in trouble for this when I get home because my wife pays the bills, and she's going to say, see, you don't know what happens.
The gas company.
The gas company came out. Yeah, the gas company came out and checked that. The other thing, in the year 2010, and again, I mentioned there was two things. One is going to one clarifier primarily, going back and forth between. The second thing that happened is they got the chlorine contact chamber working correctly. And this was around a 2006 installation that was done. And it injects the chlorine into the system. Back in 2010, it was improperly
installed
or something. Yeah, it was improperly wired. And John Clements figured it out, called out an electrician. They rewired it because it wouldn't take the programming. And it was part of the reason that I think the plant was violating its discharge permits. And so in 2010, daily chlorine usage was 956 pounds per day. It's about $1 a pound is what we pay for it. In 2013, chlorine usage went down to 294 pounds a day from 956. And last year, and he doesn't have the number here, last year it went down again. And so if you look at that, we're saving over about $700 per day in chlorine. And this was one of the positive changes that happened from from doing the plant, and having people that understood the process better. And so there's been enough. There was a they did a voluntary PG&E audit, some conveyor systems for sludge. But again, the most important thing is that the plant is operating in the black, that we are moving forward on. This is coming up real soon, and I really want to keep the progress moving on this. A secondary treatment plant, or maybe just replace this plant, possibly for doing recycled water. We're looking around the trunk lines near Roy Grandy, Grover, Oceano, and trying to find something that's out of the coastal zone to try to protect the 2.5 million gallons a day that's coming out of our community. About 5 million gallons a day, if you include Pismo, goes out. 4.5 to 5 million gallons a day goes out the outfall. And so, in these times of drought, Pismo is working on a recycle project. We're starting. The feasibility is starting for our recycle project, and hopefully, we can keep the positive news coming from the plant. So, and I thank everybody for coming out and the support that I've received from people on this. I really do. I really appreciate it.
Great report. Thanks, Matt. Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions regarding the sanitation district?
I actually did. I was wondering where you're at on the finding a general manager, or are you extending a contract for?
For Rick Sweet?
Mm-hmm.
We just extended it in December.
Okay.
Because we had Paul Karp, and then when Paul Karp, because he's a retired guy, so he has the hour limitations.
Okay.
Rick Sweet retired from Santa Maria in December, and we signed another contract with him. He is a part-time administrator.
Okay.
We have him for 15 hours a week at $100 an hour.
Okay.
And that goes through at least the year, and it might be a two-year contract. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Thank you.
Great. Anybody else have any questions? This project's really, really important to not only Oceano, but the Five Cities area. If we could capture and reuse 500 million gallons a day, it, you know, I'm not saying we could convince everybody to water their green leafy plants with it, but it can be used for multiple uses. And at this point, I don't think anybody can afford to waste any water. So I'm glad to hear that dealing with, you know, the wreckage of the past and moving forward is the ideal situation. And so thank you very much for keeping that moving forward. I know it hasn't been easy.
Not lately.
Okay. Okay, next on the agenda. Karen.
I really haven't had any meetings since the last time, but I did attend most of the hearing on the Oceano Vehicle Recreation. I never can remember the whole name of it. The Oceano Vehicle Recreation, the Coastal Commission had a hearing today and testimony on them moving forward on many aspects that are kind of in limbo, including the issue of dust on the Napomo Mesa, the issue of new entrances into the dunes, and on and on. And it started at about 1:30, and I left at 6, and it was still going on. So there was testimony from Beaches and Parks, testimony report from Coastal Commission, and then individuals were finally speaking. There were probably 20 people from the Napomo Dunes area, Monarch, that area, really complaining about the particulate and the dust challenges that they have up there. And I think it is a problem that's going to be hard to resolve because of the claims and counterclaims, whether the dunes, the dune vehicles themselves churn up the dust and make it smaller and allow it to blow into the mesa more readily. And the wind has always been from the ocean and it has always blown. That's how that mesa got there. But at the same time, there are indications that it's worse because of the vehicles. So anyway, that's what I did all afternoon. It was quite interesting. I didn't speak.
Mrs. Blackburn.
I just attended the Finance Committee meeting, and we previewed the discussion that we're going to have today, so we'll cover that more in detail later.
Great. Ms. Angelo?
I arrived at 9:05 for the Coastal Commission meeting, and I left too before it was over. Same, mostly the concerns about the variety of people that from the Mesa are complaining about the sand blowing. I did speak, but I didn't get enough time to cover everything I thought of, so after that I left. But, you know, the particulates is a big thing for Napomo, although they tore down all the eucalyptus trees that blocked that, and it's always blown wind out that way.
Yeah.
It's nothing new, but it's another attempt to just close the whole facility down.
Yes, I would agree to that. Whether you're for or against it, the issue was the people up there, many of whom have lived there for 3, 4, 2 years. And I go back to the county let that area be developed. And nobody talks about counties being in any way, shape, or responsible for what was developed. Golf courses with no water and those kind of things. And this development is still going on up there.
The property owners that bought into it should probably go back and sue the developer and the county both.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I attended the Water Resource Advisory Committee, one of my favorite committees of all of them, at last Wednesday. We talked a lot about the summary report, the community input on the summary report. The summary report is kind of the guiding light on assessing and kind of giving a thumb sketch, I guess, or whatever, an example of each geographic area and where we are in this drought and what science we have available, what we don't have available, and what we need to properly assess it, along with, you know, sources of water that could possibly be available. So that was pretty much the main discussion. And, of course, you know, the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin, you know, the North County is very, very important. And so a lot of discussion happens around the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin. And I, too, attended the Coastal Commission. And I figured there must be an important item on the agenda beyond just a basic review of the off-road vehicular beach, the Oceano Dunes, better known as. There were most of the mayors from the surrounding cities were there. I did not speak on behalf of the board of directors because I had not talked to the board of directors about speaking, so I spoke generally as a resident. Mainly is that I believe in access for all. If there's going to be a beach and it's going to be paid by taxpayers, then it needs to be accessible for all. And that includes horses and buggies, which I just happened to bring a picture of a horse and buggy from the beach that I took Thursday. So trying to kind of broaden the issues. I also attempted to point out to them that Oceano is not getting the same economical benefit that our sister cities, our neighbors, are getting, as you can tell. We have nowhere near the resources that Pismo, Grover, AG, Napomo, or any of the other ones have. But still, the park hub is in Oceano. And so something is broke, and I'm not quite sure how it's to be fixed, but you can't have such, you know, 2 million visitors a year come in, and the town that they're coming to be so barren. So there, somewhere along the line, there's some inequities, and I think that working with the entities next door will definitely maybe shed some light. So I left at 4:30, so I got home and got a little chicken and potatoes and then headed over to the meeting. So I was selfish and left a little early. But they were going on. And I didn't learn a new trick, though, while I was there. And that if you sign up your children and your pets and your dog and everything else you name, then you get that extra time at the mic. So if you just write down, you know, Mary Lucy, 2 minutes, you know, I mean, that's what they give you, 2 minutes, you're going to get 2 minutes to present. But if you put Mary Lucy and my dog Pismo, but leave out the dog part, and my bird Slater, right, I'm going to get 6 minutes. So, because they'll surrender their time to me, you know.
And
so
somebody
there
got
were
10
some,
minutes.
Some community members who... I thought it was slick. I'm sorry.
I wish I had thought of it, yeah.
I personally wish I had thought of it, too. It's not that, you know, I endorse it, but it is quick. So next time you're on short time leash, just add your animals and speak on
kids,
their behalf.
Grandkids, whatever.
There was a gentleman who got 10 minutes that way.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He took his little dog and... That dog got 2 minutes, and his baby got 2 minutes, and his aunt and some other state got 2 minutes. So, but it was a very, very interesting discussion, and I was happy that there were more people who were in support of our beach than opposed, and we do have some problems, and we do have to care about people's health. So there's that's on that note, I'm going to keep moving. So, where are we at, Mr. Ogren?
Consent agenda.
Consent agenda.
Okay. Are you clear? Is there anybody that's opposed to passing the consent agenda as it is? We accidentally left out two attachments in the packet, which were the will serve letters saying we will serve you.
Which are available for the public to review.
Which we have up there. And so... if there's nobody opposed to that, I would entertain a motion to pass the consent agenda. But also, too, is that the board had talked about will serves just being handled on an administrative level. Does anybody remember if we took a vote on that?
We did not take a vote on it.
Yeah, okay. So future agenda items.
Agreed.
Because I don't think the board is real...
I think it would be appropriate to talk about that particular topic under future agenda items.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So let's
I think we're
that under future agenda items. So I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll move that we approve the consent agenda with the added will serve letters.
Great.
Just one second. You didn't officially open and close public comment.
Oh. Is there any public comment on the consent agenda items? No, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
You had it.
Yeah, and then Karen seconded.
Okay. So, do we need a roll call vote on that one?
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes. Okay, on that note, it's a 5-0 passes. And we will move along to... business items, right?
Correct.
Now you need to open public comment.
And, no. I'm going to do it. Can I take the prerogative of doing something a little different here? I want to move public comment to after the business items.
Certainly. So the recommendation in the staff report for 10A on the study session is to take public comment after the staff report and initial board question and answers. Since there's only two items that are on the business items, you can do it on both of them. I'll note that for item 10, the public comment period, the general, also includes special presentations and discussion of board of directors and outside committees. So you might want to ask if there's any public comment on the special presentations reports, committee reports at this time.
At this time?
Correct.
Okay. So does anybody have anything that they'd like to comment on Mario's report or anybody else's report? Nope. Okay, hearing none. Public comments closed. All right. Now we're back to item number 10. Since this is a pretty in-depth staff report, which I greatly appreciate, I thought that we would attempt to put public comment to the end. So if there are questions generated during that, then they could be answered.
But before the vote?
Yeah, sure, just as long as it happens before the vote.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
President Lucy, members of the board, item 10A is a study session on the fiscal impact resulting from the drought and water conservation and other factors in consideration of policy direction to staff on possible rate modifications and or increases in accordance with Proposition 218. Ordinance 2011-1 is the ordinance that established the current water service charges of the district. And I have a number of different slides, and I'll have some introductions. But sort of the three leading questions are, how do actual revenues compare to the revenue requirement? And so in Ordinance 2011-1, when that was adopted, the board adopted revenue requirements. And there's copies available for the public of that ordinance as well as for your board. And essentially what I did is I highlighted in yellow what the 2014-15 total revenue requirement was that was estimated when Ordinance 2011-1 was adopted and what was incorporated into Ordinance 2011-1. So one of the questions that we'll be addressing through this presentation is, how do the actual revenues now compare to that revenue requirement when Ordinance 2011-1 was adopted? How has water conservation reduced water system revenues? And what actions are needed to help ensure the district's financial recovery? In the introduction, the three major topics that I'm covering in the introduction are, tonight I am seeking some initial policy direction on water system revenues. There's going to be no formal action tonight, and in fact I'm going to cover through Prop 218 steps and some of the process and the next steps that are the action-oriented steps. And then I also want to cover what are we not covering right now, because in this water systems revenue analysis, there are certain things that we're tackling, but there are also some things that we're not tackling, so I'll go through those as well. With respect to this initial policy direction on water system revenues for tonight, there's three primary questions. In the written staff report, there's a number of questions for your board to consider as we're having this discussion. And I'm not going to repeat those questions during my staff report. They're in the written staff report. But in general, what revenue target is appropriate for fiscal year 2015-16? Again, in Ordinance 2011-1, there was an adopted revenue requirement of just over $2 million. So what would be the appropriate target for 15-16? The second is, what modifications are appropriate to the base rates versus the tiered rates? So our water rate structures have really two different components. There's a base rate, a minimum bill that everybody has to pay, and for that there's a certain amount of water. And then the additional ones are dependent on consumption. And so I'll walk through that. And underneath the basic scenario that we need to recover for lost revenues, then how do we modify that rate formula? And that's base rates versus tiered rates. And then third, what water conservation target is appropriate as the drought continues? And I need to have some sort of a target there so that I can continue with the analysis, the water rate analysis. And we just had a technical problem.
Aren't computers wonderful?
Yes, they are. There we go. Got it back pretty quick, actually. And I want to make sure I didn't actually miss out on a slide there.
You didn't.
I did, okay. the next phase of the discussion under what are the process and next steps. So I'm going to cover Proposition 218 and timing efforts associated with that. That's the formal process that the district needs to follow. Finance committee efforts, because with the intent of initial policy direction tonight, there's more work that needs to be done. And I think that ferreting out and reviewing the details with the Finance Committee is appropriate, and then developing the final detailed recommendations with the Finance Committee members to come back to the board as a whole is appropriate. And then we have some community outreach that's going to be important during the whole process. In terms of what are we not covering tonight, and that's the district's long-term plan. There's two components of the long-term plan that were evaluated in 2011 and continue to need to be evaluated now. They were not incorporated into the rate increase in 2011, and those are the system infrastructure repairs or the upgrades. We have a lot of lines that are a lot of deferred maintenance. And then financial reserves. As we all know, the financial reserves of the water system are pretty sparse. And so those both were addressed in 2011, but they were deferred at that point in time. And we are going to have to defer them for a year. Our 2015 goals that were adopted by your board in January include the work necessary to build that long-term plan. But essentially, those additional details are going to be addressed this time next year. So those are the primary items that we're not addressing right now. Moving into a little bit more detail, and I'm going to cover those three topics actually in reverse order so that we conclude with policy discussion. I also want to make the statement that as I'm starting to move to the details of these slides, I'm going to pause for a second at each of the end of each of the slides. In case your board has any questions, I want to entertain the questions as we're going through the presentation as opposed to waiting for the presentation to end. So doing, not doing, again, the left box shows what are we doing tonight. We're reviewing Ordinance 2011-1 and addressing the revenue shortfall, and then developing, subject to your board's consideration, policy direction on the 2015 revenue target. And then we're also going to be doing some comparisons of the revenues and comparisons of what was adopted in 2011-1. But again, what are we not doing? We're not addressing the long-term maintenance costs. We've been generically talking about those as the pro forma costs because that's in the 2015 work plan. We're not doing the update on the infrastructure replacement in the 2015 work plan, the financial reserves. And then the two other items that I want to speak to real quickly are future staffing levels and contract violations or non-compliance with some of our financial contracts. And what I talk about future staffing levels and when we're here this time next year, that long-term plan really needs to be based on the long-term organizational structure of the district. So what is the long-term organizational structure going to be when I'm not here and when we're replacing me with a general manager and the other staffing levels? Because I think it's important to make sure that in our public outreach efforts from the very get-go that we remind everybody that the hiring of me was specifically to help with the district's recovery. And so part of that recovery then is developing a long-term plan for the organization, the staffing levels. And in that 2015 analysis, we're going to have to be looking at that. So I think it's just really important to emphasize to the community that the long-term plan is going to address, what is the general manager's duty? Are we going to rehire an accountant, or are we going to have organizational changes? And I think that's important because in a year from now, making sure that the community has got a good understanding of long-term vision is very, very important. And seeing no questions on that slide, I'll move forward. In terms of process and next steps, so the efforts that we're embarking on, they are subject to Proposition 218. The first three bullets I have is just a really quick discussion on the three basic components of Prop 218. There's special taxes, there's assessments, and then there's service charges or property-related fees. We're not talking about special taxes tonight. That requires two-thirds voter approval in order to pass a special tax. And we're not talking about assessments tonight. That requires 50% property owner approval, where in assessments, each property owner essentially gets one vote for every dollar of assessment that's proposed against them. So in an assessment proceeding, if I have an apartment building, for example, and I have to pay more because I have a bunch of units than a single-family residential unit, I get more votes. And again, that rule on assessments is essentially $1 per vote. But we're not talking about those two provisions of Prop 218. We're talking about the property-related fees and the service charges. And on the very basics of Prop 218, those do not require a vote, but there is a protest hearing. And associated with the protest hearing, we have some requirements. If the protest by the community was significant enough, 50% protest of all property owners or users, then it would not allow the board to adopt the ordinance to increase the rates for a year. City of Paso Robles kind of had that challenge for a number of years, and they had to do a number of redos. But the point is that there's a restriction on your board if a protest hearing is... if there's a 50% protest, you could always restructure what you're doing and put that back out on the table. So there's a protest hearing, and that protest hearing, we have to have at least 45 days from when we mail the notices before we have the protest hearing. And in a little bit of details, in a subsequent slide, I'll talk about specific timing that we're looking at. The noticing requirement itself under Proposition 218 has some specific details. We have to notice them of what the amount of the proposed charges are, and that's essentially putting out what our rate structure is. The basis of on which it's calculated, the reason, and the date, time, and location of the public hearing. And that way the public has adequate information to gain knowledge and ask us more questions and whether or not they choose to protest the proposed action or not. So, again, the process itself is underneath Prop 218, and it has specific protest hearing and noticing requirements. And I misspoke slightly there. Paso Robles actually didn't have challenges with the protest hearing. After they adopted the rates, there was a referendum, and the referendum had at least 10% of the registered voters. And then that did referendum force them to take their actions to a popular vote. So on the surface, under property-related fees, that's not a requirement. But the requirement of protest hearings and the ability for people to have referendums means that, you know, we have to kind of see how it goes in terms of whether or not those subsequent efforts are going to have to be addressed or not. Yes. Ms. Wright? Director White, Vice President White.
This protest hearing and this process.
Yes.
Can we do that in-house, or do we have to hire somebody to?
We're not hiring. We can do it in-house. Jeff and I are going to be coordinating on some of the legals. Celia and I have been doing a lot of the analysis on the customer rate structures already.
Okay, so it'll just be done in-house without any.
That's correct.
No consultants.
That's correct.
Or special study people. Thank you.
Certainly.
And can I just follow up real quick? What does those assessments usually cost in the past? I, for some reason, like $20,000 keeps popping into my head, but I have no idea.
Yeah, we took a quick peek at the costs associated with the Tuckfield analysis in 2011, and I'm not sure that we captured all the invoices, but we did see invoices, Marie, in excess of $20,000. And that's kind of the ballpark for a district of this size is usually you're in the $20,000 to $40,000 range for those types of work efforts.
Right.
And, of course, I'll make a little bit of a plug down in one of the subsequent slides. On the rate model that we're developing right now, it's serving multiple purposes, but it essentially eliminates the need to have to hire a financial consultant on the rate analysis ever again, as long as we... You know, we're developing the model, we're proofing it, and every billing period we just need to update the module, and the district's really going to be good to go for a very long time.
And I think that's important for people to hear that, you know, there's a reason why we brought in this level of knowledge for things just like this, where Mr. Ogren can step in, provide this analysis, and the district not only will save at a minimum of $20,000 the first year, but will continually save for every year after that. So it just
goes. It's a little bit like the positive moves that the sanitation district is making as well.
That's right.
That's the goal.
So any other questions on this slide?
No.
Okay. So in terms of specific dates then, so obviously tonight is the study session, initial policy direction. And then I would anticipate going back to the Finance Committee to review detailed rate calculations and to develop recommendations on those details. I would like to be back on your board on February 25th with the initial reading of an ordinance. That's a pretty tight timeline. And so I put a special meeting in March, really that first week of March, might be necessary. But whether it's the February 25th meeting or a special meeting in the first week of March, that's when we would introduce the ordinance. We would review the form of the notice that then gets sent to property owners. And that's important because we want your board to make a finding that that form includes the information that's required by Prop 218. And then whether or not other things, one of the things that legal counsel and I need to review is the requirements for a protest ballot and do some of the additional detail review. The general inclination is we're not required to submit a protest ballot or not, but that's a few of the details that we need to scrub out of Prop 218 prior to coming back to your board. So these are the most immediate actions or next steps and the timing. The next slide sort of works out to the opposite end of the spectrum or the time scale in that we have meter reads on or about May 18th, and that covers that covers the March to May period. But the reason why that's important is that for the rate to be effective at the next subsequent, which is July 18th, they need to be in effect when this billing period starts on May 18th. We could, in theory, do some prorated bills, but on water systems and the way the variable or the tiers work, that would be extraordinarily complicated. If it was a wastewater system and it was just a flat monthly bill, then splitting a billing period might not be very difficult. But May 18th ends up being a critical date because if we don't hit that, then it won't be in effect until the next billing period that starts on July 18th. And ideally, we'll have it in effect so that it is in effect the entirety of next fiscal year. Well, with that being sort of the end deadline of the process and the 45-day noticing period, then, the ordinances don't go into effect until 30 days after they're adopted. So from a May 18th date, we need to move back 30 days, basically mid-April, and say that that's when we have to have the public hearing and the protest hearing is mid-April. And then because there's a 45-day noticing requirement, we have to pull back another 45 days for that, and that's where I came up with the conclusion that we have to introduce and initiate the noticing end of February, no later than the first week in March, and therefore that's why I'm concluding that we may have to have a special meeting.
And did the fiscal committee review this timeline?
No, we didn't. Okay. What we did is we covered the basis of the financial evaluation that's included in the staff report and talked about some of the policy considerations. And then after the meeting on Monday, I went back into the Prop 218 guidelines, verified, and then came up with this schedule.
And I just stepped away for a second. Did you discuss the impacts on the drought having on our finances yet?
No, those are coming up. So I'm working backwards through it so that we cover the process issue first and stuff, okay, and then get into the meat of it toward the wrap up part of it. And then, so here we are into the financial analysis. And one of the things that I want to make sure to point out as I move into the number analysis, and especially the revenue graphs, and especially this one, is that in developing the rate model, Celia and I have been going through and auditing all of the customer accounts. And we found a few where they were residential and they should be commercial accounts, or commercial and they should be residential accounts. We've also found, a couple of little oddities, I guess. Not anything that I would consider to be significant, with one exception. And the exception is that the meter charges for non-commercial may not have been increased as the ordinance had outlined. And so I need to do some additional financial analysis on that and going back to the Finance Committee, because, in fact, as we talk about what our revenue shortfall has been, what we projected to be, that shortfall would actually be a smaller number if we corrected the meter charges. And what we can do is, if we look to Ordinance 2011-1 right now, and it's really on that same page that I had the highlight on the revenue requirement, there's a line on there that says commensurate increase in commercial meter charges. And the sort of the shortfall of this ordinance that was adopted in 2011-1 is that it really shouldn't say something like commensurate increase because it's subject to interpretation then, and in prior years, I'm not sure that it was interpreted properly. What they really should have laid out for each of the increases that are identified, because there's a February 11, a January 12, a January 13, and a July 14th increase. Rather than saying commensurate increase in commercial meter charges, they should have just laid out exactly what those dollar amounts were so that there was no misinterpretation of them. But it is what it is, so that's a detail that we have to do some additional work on and additional evaluation in the next couple days and to determine whether or not, to what extent that item has had an effect on our revenue shortfall. In addition, as we've been going through and auditing the different accounts, it's made me question some of the data that we've pulled up and that are in this graph. And so I want to just sort of give you a general barometer for where these estimates illustrated might be. And one is in the staff report, we have an estimate of about an 11% shortfall in revenues. And as Celia and I finish up our audit, my general back-of-the-envelope calculations is that 11% shortfall in revenues might be as low as an 8% shortfall in revenues. I think it's going to be closer to 11% based on some of the work that we were doing today. But, again, I want to sort of just make the point of emphasis that this graph here that illustrates the revenues is something that we're going account by account on in order to evaluate, in order to confirm accuracy before we move into the steps of doing, the final rate analysis. But with that said, this graph illustrates really well, I think, the revenue shortfalls that we're looking at. So the black line is the line that is how much we would be collecting on a bi-monthly basis pursuant to Ordinance 2011-1. Up above that, there's a green line, and that's the green line. That's the amount of revenues that the Tuckfield analysis in 2011 had been recommending. The primary difference between those two analyses is that the Tuckfield analysis included recommendations for funding the capital replacement program, and they included recommendations for larger additions to reserves. The fact that the district in 2011 adopted a lesser rate structure, when I looked at the details, didn't surprise me. I don't think that there was anything wrong with those decisions in 2011. In 2011, the district was facing a rate increase, and it's common for districts to phase in rate increases. So implicitly, what I believe probably happened was they raised the rate, the board at the time raised the rates in 2011 to cover the basic needs of the district, and then said, we will address the additional revenues that are necessary for the reserves and the infrastructure project, at such time as appropriate. And I didn't go through and listen to all the audio tape. I read all the minutes, but I didn't listen to all the audio tape. But my experience in looking at rate increases and looking at the different components that are being proposed, certainly the action that was taken by the board in 2011 made a lot of sense to me. So that's a little bit of a comparison for the black line and the green line. Now, with respect to the yellow line, that's the current year's adopted budget. And going in, we knew that conservation and revenues were down, and so then a lesser amount was adopted in the budget based on best estimates, as opposed to what was adopted in 2011. And And that yellow line shows that with the red bars and the yellow bar is our first billing period in 2015, the January one. But it shows that our revenues are tracking pretty closely with what we budgeted. And I think the best analysis that I have right now is that the current revenue stream is running at just over $50,000 a year, better than what we predicted in the budget. The difference between the blue bars and the red bars really are what show the current conservation efforts as a result of the drought. After the governor declared the emergency and pressed the need for a 20% conservation. So we see the blue bars and we see the red bars are the drop in revenue. We see that we've done a pretty good job of predicting what those would be in the current year. But the difference between the black bar and the yellow bar really is the revenue shortfall that we're looking at. Now, whether that's an 11% or an 8% number, the point is it's about 10% plus or minus as compared to Ordinance 2011-1. This is the table. It's in your I'm not going to go through the details, but these are the actual numbers that we have. And on the bottom right where it shows a negative $221,617, that's an estimate based on an 11% shortfall. The estimate based on an 8% is more around $160-some thousand. So, again, that's what we're doing. Celia and I are doing on that right now is we're scouring all of the account-by-account information. The rate model is set up so that it can also be used as an audit tool. And before we come back to the Finance Committee, we'll have that nailed down at a higher level of detail. Moving on then to expenditures, because in a situation where clearly there's a revenue shortfall, then an obvious question comes up, well, how are we going to deal with it, and can we deal with it on the expenditure side? If we're down on revenues, then can we cut expenditures? The left column, this is called a stack bar chart, where you just stack all the different cost categories on top of each other, and you can see somewhat how the cost categories are comparing. I have another slide in about two that does a better comparison of the individual categories. But in total, when you stack all those costs on top of each other, we can see that the adopted 2014-15 budget is actually higher than Ordinance 2011-1, but less than the Tuckfield analysis. And the basic biggest cost component there is the cost associated with surface water. And that's our state water costs and our Lopez. That's the big chunk in the green. And those have tracked higher than where it was estimated in 2011. That's an especially important point because of two different reasons. That's an external cost that the district doesn't have the ability to really manage. I mean, it's a cost that's incurred because we have contracts with the flood control district, and those contracts have billing formulas associated with it. Now, we do have a little bit of ability to control the cost because, for example, if we're not bringing in state water, we don't have to pay variable costs associated with state water. But those are substantially fixed in nature, and that's the biggest driver associated with why our expenditures higher than what they were projected in 2011. Its second reason why that's important is Prop 218 has a provision that on these contracts, if the contracts increase greater than what we had projected at the time we do a rate increase, Prop 218 allows you to pass through the increase through your rate structure without having to go back through a Prop 218 process. Now, what we have to do this time is we would have to identify exactly what we were going to do. So let's say the state water is $10,000 in a particular year higher than we estimated. We would have to predefine how the rate structure is going to be modified, but we don't have to go through the Prop 218 process again. And that's a technique that you can do. You can incorporate it into your ordinance for not to exceed 5 years, but it gives agencies like Oceano the ability to not fall behind when our billings under contracts from other agencies increase. That particular detail we will come back and explain more when we actually bring the ordinance back. But that's also important.
I have a question.
Certainly.
A clarification, I guess. So on that last slide, it shows that the expenditures are higher than the 2011-1 expected expenditures or projected expenditures. So even though on, I guess, Exhibit A, I'm not sure which slide it was, sorry, but the revenue comparison, even though we're tracking for revenue, our expenditures exceed our revenue still.
And that's why in the current year's budget, we have a significant shortfall right. that's being paid for through, you know, the limited reserves that we have.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So now those different cost categories and focusing in on the 2014-15 budget itself, expenditures. You know, as mentioned, the big portion of the pie chart, surface water supply, state water, and Lopez water, is nearly two-thirds of the entire water system budget. A couple other things that if you take admin and indirect, which is our administrative cost allocation, and that includes a share of the admin labor, but it's not just labor. That's at 13%, and wages and benefits are at 8%. Add them together, and that's 21%. So out of the water system budget, we know our labor costs are at something less than 20%. And that's also an important because, you know, in agencies where there's budget constraints, especially in the recent, you know, financial crisis that we had nationwide, under cost-cutting measures and putting people on furloughs and those types of actions as a way of to save on the budget, when your total labor costs are less than 20% of your budget, the ability to implement furloughs and really generate any significant cost savings just simply aren't there. The numbers don't make sense, but yet the furloughs themselves could actually have a decrease in service levels. So in a recovery plan idea, when your board is considering are there expenditures that we can cut as a way of dealing with the revenue shortfall, maybe nipping around the edges a little bit, you know, the debt service numbers include some repayment of interfund loans. Those could be, you know, again, deferred for a year until we get to the long-term plan. But there's not a lot of flexibility on the expenditure side. And even when we look at this year's budget, we know that it's tracking very, very tight. So that's the pie chart and expenditures by category, and I think the good thing is that it really helps to illustrate, you know, the different cost components and how small or large they are in comparison to the total water system budget. And then this one is a modified version of that stack bar chart, but it takes all of the categories and it puts them side by side. So like the pie chart, it helps to illustrate that surface water really is by far the dominant cost category that we have. And then the blue and the red and the green track the difference between what was estimated in the Tuckfield report, what was used as the basis for Ordinance 2011-1. Those two numbers are extremely close. And then the green line is what are we incurring right now. So, you know, again, another illustration of the same data, but it helps to illustrate the points a little bit differently. This here is the numbers. This is Exhibit D in the staff report that supports those expenditure graphs, both sort of line item details on the top and then the subtotals on the bottom portion of the sheet. And it breaks out the numbers. So like on wages and benefits, we're actually running about $16,000 under what was projected in 2011. Again, surface water is running about $140,000 over. In the staff report, I mentioned about half of that additional cost associated with surface water is in the current budget. We have some money budgeted for the multi-year program. Whether we have to pay that or not is still an issue that we're working on with the county, but certainly that's a one-time expense. It would not move into next year's budget. And so in comparison to next year's budget, you know, that $140,000 gap is going to drop by $65,000 to $70,000. But then we also are notified that our state water costs are increasing about, 5 or 8%. So, so these are the numbers that are illustrated in the graph. And then moving into then the policy direction. So what should the revenue target be? In Ordinance 2011-1, it's just over $2 million. And then should there be a cost of living or some increment added for the 2015-16 budget? I think the discussion should be in the realm of if there is an increment added, Is it a 1%, 2%, 3%, 4% number? And whatever the policy direction on that is, then we'll certainly provide a basis for helping develop next year's expenditure plan.
To weigh in there, I think we should. I know other people are now that the economy is turning around. We just did one at the sanitation district, or we just discussed one, I should say, at the sanitation district.
And so
I think it's important that the employees be recognized.
And this is my last slide, so this is a good point where we start discussing it. And so one is, what should the regular target be? Again, how should the rate structure be adjusted in terms of base rates versus tiered rates? And I have a handout on that, and I can pop up the model as well. But we can talk about that some. And then this, but I have two bullet points here on the rate structure. One is base rates versus tiered rates with respect to the revenue shortfall. And then the same question is that if your board gives direction for a COLA or an increment for 2015-16, then should that be base rates or tiered rates? So there's really two questions embedded in there. And then the third policy is, what should be the water conservation target? And the governor says 20%. And the importance of that policy direction on water conservation is that the graph that showed what are we budgeting and what are we collecting right now, well, there's a certain amount of conservation that is incorporated in that. And so we've got to finish the calculations. And if the target is 20% and we've already achieved a portion of that, then I've got to figure out two different rate structures. One is the rate structure for how are we going to proceed during the drought. And then second, once the drought is over and people can resume, you know, prior consumption habits, and noting that normally consumption does not go back up to what it was, especially it doesn't go up immediately. There's often a couple years where people, you know, were super conscientious during the drought and right after the drought. And then it takes a couple of years before we start feeling comfortable again to use the same amount of water that we previously used. And then we often don't see it going all the way back up to what it once was. And sometimes that's because there's this systemic conservation where people, if they replace their grass with other landscaping materials during the drought, they end up liking it and they don't go back to the grass. Or we always have a certain amount of systemic conservation because of toilet retrofits and those kind of things. But the importance of the conservation target is so that I can calculate two different rate structures. One is, what do we need to do in order to meet our conservation numbers? And then the second one, what's the new normal going to be after the drought is over? Embedded in this issue is, what happens if we develop this drought rate structure and people still use more water and we end up getting additional revenues because of it? What are we going to do with those additional revenues? And my general policy recommendation on that is that, to the extent, if that happens, and I don't know what will happen, but if it does happen, then those additional revenues I would recommend would be put in a fund for water conservation incentives. Because, you know, recognizing that some people are going to continue to want to keep their landscaping alive and they're going to be willing to spend the money, well, then take that excess money and use it to try to implement, you know, whether it's toilet retrofits or whatnot, for other people to conserve water elsewhere. So going from the top then, on what should the revenue target be, again, we have Ordinance 2011-1 that took us through 2014-15 and stopped, and that's the number. And unless I don't see any reason to change the number that's already in the ordinance, but should a cost of living or increment be adjusted for 2015-16? And then, in to sort of tease the question a little bit about the sand district and the economy is doing a little bit better, what you'll see in the next agenda item is that through Zone 3, the county is starting to bill a little bit extra in 15-16 in order to start building up some reserves for the Lopez operations. They hadn't been building up reserves over the last several years because after the completion of the seismic remediation job, then they did the water treatment plant upgrade. So all of our agencies got hit with this additional debt service. And when the facilities are recently upgraded, the need for reserves is not immediate. So the county deferred any buildup in reserves and charging us, and now that the economy is in a better shape, they're incrementally starting to push up those reserves. So again, is this a good opportunity to make some sort of a basic inflationary adjustment We know that in the long-term plan, there's going to have to be some additional rate considerations. And if anything, this is just sort of a small step in that direction. So that's the question then of, well, really, what is your board's comfort level? Is it sticking with the 2011 revenue target, a 1%, a 2%, a 3%, 4% increase in order to start nudging us up a little bit, but not by keeping it well within reason, you know, given the current economy? So I would sort of urge a little bit board discussion at this point in time. And, you know, my recommendation would be something in a 2 to 3% range.
Which is an increase of $40,000 to $60,000 in revenue, if anybody's interested.
Could you say that again? I couldn't hear you, Jennifer.
Sorry. Which would be an increase of $40,000 to $60,000 in revenue.
Is that 3%?
2% is 40, 3% is 60.
One of the things that we could do is phase in. We've done that before where, you know, we'll say 4% for 2% this year, 2% next year.
Except for this revenue target is just going to be...
Just for this year?
Yes, because we're going to be here back here next year to address the long-term plan.
Right.
Yeah, we have to have a formula for the drought because, you know, no good deed goes unpunished.
Right.
You know, we conserved our water, you know, we've done such a good job at it that we kind of cut ourselves financially short, you know, because the residents took it seriously and really cut back on their water usage, which we're all very happy that they saw the bigger picture. But it's
I think that's a really good point of emphasis for, you know, those who tune in and watch your board's hearings. Last week, I was interviewed on that Charter Cable, Brad Pomerantz. And that was the focus of discussion, was how is the drought affecting small districts' water rates? And, you know, in larger agencies that have more financial reserves, they can kind of weather the storm by dipping into those reserves. Other agencies, if they have the ability to cut back on expenditures, can do that to weather the storm. I guess it's weather the lack of a storm, right? Instead of saving your money for a rainy day, the question is saving your money for a drought. So other agencies have the ability to take different approaches, but the revenue shortfall for Oceano really is having a significant impact,
yes.
And it has to be addressed. The idea that Brad sort of asked me a little bit of a pointed question on that, doesn't this just seem like a double whammy, you know? And there is a certain amount of feelings about that, right? We have to conserve water, and then it feels like, and then we're going to conserve, and then they're going to increase our rates.
We're going to charge you for conserving.
Yeah. That's where no good deed goes
unpunished. Right. And I think that the emphasis really needs to be that, look, the revenue target was established in 2011, and the additional revenues that we're really talking about in 2015-16 is because that ordinance stopped in 2014-15. And so there's an increment there that this modification due to the rates is that, you know, we conserve water, but our costs really don't go down, and the need to collect the same amount of revenue still is there. So technically it's not asking for a lot more money, but it's just saying the district really needs to collect the amount of money that was established in 2011.
And when it comes to our overhead, I think that we're a little lax sometimes. Well, maybe in the past we were a little lax. You know, like, for example, the will serve letters for the Sand District. You know, somehow that kind of fell through the cracks, and that was a little bit. We had an arrangement with Arroyo Grande for 100-acre feet, and that lasted 5 years. Maybe
four.
Even longer,
yeah.
You know, but still $100,000 to a little district that has a...
$156,000.
You know, has a little tiny budget of under $3 million. What is our budget, like $2.5 million or something? That's a big hit. And then on top of that, the drought. And so we do the responsible thing and all cut back, and it cut back, you know, the district as well. So I don't think it's a fault of any, you know,
droughts
whole
are kind
organization.
Of interesting.
It's just the nature of the beast. And
well, droughts are interesting because they are natural disasters, mm-hmm. but they're the one natural disaster that sneaks up on you. You know, it's not like a hurricane or an earthquake that is here and boom, and then all of a sudden you're feeling the effect and you got to recover. It's the natural disaster that after 3 years you're like, oh my goodness, we're in a drought.
Keeps on giving.
Yeah. And so these financial adjustments in these situations are very much different than when we see happening in earthquakes or hurricanes, where the damage and the recovery is just on you immediately and you have to figure out what you're going to do about it immediately. But a drought is still a natural disaster, and we still have to be able to respond to it.
And I think, too, is that particularly this area, you know, it's been narrowed down that the drought did start on the Central Coast and that we've been suffering drought conditions longer than the rest of the state of California. So for the state to even acknowledge there was a drought, there was a delay, you know, because, oh, well, it's not, we're not quite sure it's a drought yet. You know, well, it might be a drought. And so by year three, almost four, they're going, okay, we're officially a drought. But, Central California had already been into it for some time with, you know, since our last good storm, which was 2010.
So, Jennifer, you were crunching some numbers. 2% is 40,000, 3% is 60, makes 4% about 80.
Yep.
And we're short about 150, right?
And we're short 200, compared to the budget?
Compared to budget, yeah.
Yeah, then we're short 258,000.
Is that the 2011 budget?
No, that's the 14-15 budget.
Okay. Because I was looking at the 167, the difference.
Well, and we also know that, again, that multi-year program cost is going to drop off.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know that. So next year, with like, for example, a 4%, that's approximately $80,000. The savings on the multi-year program is going to run approximately $70,000, 65%. I can't. Those two combined would be about $150,000. And then when it comes to the budget, in order to get the budget to balance, to me, the final adjustment would be what's the appropriate amount for repayment of interfund debt. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like with a 4% adjustment, I feel very confident we'd be able to develop a balanced budget next year. It's still going to be a tight budget. It's not going to have all the long-term, issues we need to deal with. But to me, that's definitely a recovery amount, and then it gives us the ability next year to do the long-term planning.
I think that Oceano has been very, very cautious on not abusing the rate increase system, the 218, let's just say. You know, that we've done our best as community leaders to keep it in perspective, and that people need to realize that that if there's a rate increase and we do receive the support for it, it goes into the infrastructure. Because whether there's a drought or not a drought, we still use the pipes, we still use our mains, we still need our field staff, you know, but we still need to upgrade our pipes so we don't lose our resources. So it's put to a very, very good use.
And on that point, again, this rate increase isn't going to really address our long-term infrastructure needs. That's
right.
More for a year from now. But I think your point is well taken in terms of the district's history of being judicious on rate increases. Certainly that was part of the evaluation in 2011 and developing the strategy in 2011. And the other point, though, is that when we do turn around and we are addressing a lot of the deferred maintenance on the infrastructure, there is no, it's not even within the realm of possibility that we'll be talking about anything like some of our neighboring Napomo has had some really significant rate increases because of their water projects. Los Osos is talking about really significant rate increases in order to get their basin back into balance. This district has already incurred the costs associated with the Lopez upgrades. It's already incurred the costs associated with state water. So we don't have to face that issue like some of the other smaller CSDs have to do. So if there's any amount of nervousness about, well, what might we be looking at next year, it's still not going to be as significant as some of the other agencies, and the ability to phase that in over time is going to be possible.
Right.
So a 2-4%, you know, I think is certainly within the reason of, you know, what is, you know, reasonable expectations and everything.
Right, and the ratepayers expect us to keep our equipment in good enough condition to be able to deliver safe water to them and sewer services. You know, so that takes money. It's like people who own houses, you know, you get a leak in the roof, you fix it quickly so it doesn't hurt other things.
And as initial policy direction, we don't have to be as formal. I'm seeing one of our directors is indicating perhaps 3%.
Although it's kind of hard for me to make a motion because I'm the one person on this board that does not have to pay these water bills. So I don't know whether I have a conflict of interest enough so I shouldn't vote or...
No, it's and there's no... Think about the Board of Supervisors. they'll never have more than one person who will live in a community. And then sometimes, you know, they if they're addressing a particular community, maybe none of the board members even live in that community. So
yeah.
No, there's no conflict.
Well, you still get verbally abused.
I think we're just this is just policy direction. We're not making a motion
yeah,
at this point.
I know
say.
That.
Right.
I was just
yeah. So straw votes and what is
I
the board?
I was just bringing something up to move us forward.
Well, I think I've been thinking about this and looking it over, and I thought that if we looked at the tier structures and kind of looked at all the different ways, you know. So we look at the tier structures, and maybe we want to add a tier, reduce a tier.
President Lucy, though, those are two separate, because one is the revenue target, and then the second thing on tiers is how do we get to that revenue target?
Oh, I already thought we were there. Okay.
Yeah.
I was there.
So I'm hearing some support for 3%.
Yeah. 3 or 4, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll run with 3 then.
Do you want us to take a formal vote of confidence?
I don't think we can.
Even if you took a formal vote, it's really just policy direction. It's
right.
You're not taking any formal action today. That you can't do until you have ordinances in front of you and we do
okay,
the Prop 218 process.
Pretty right. much in the same ballpark.
Right.
For you.
Yeah, I would say 3 or 4. So.
Okay, 3 or 4.
3 or 4. Okay.
Great.
And then I'll work with the Finance Committee to, you know, develop the final recommendations.
That committee is working out so nicely.
It is.
I don't know from an outside perspective because I wouldn't dare go to the meeting. You know, I don't want to violate the Brown Act.
We have a good chair.
But, you know, it does look like it's really being discussed and it's open, you know, and it's good sound work. Thank you very much. I really, really do appreciate it.
So on the tiers then, there's a couple of different... Pardon me?
I would support a 5-tier system, but maybe starting with the same base rate we have.
Okay. And so I developed the model so that we can... Well, right now we have 3 tiers, and I developed it so that we could have as many as 5 tiers. I am going to jump out of this PowerPoint right now, though.
And onto a chart?
You know, this is kind of... I know... I am a wannabe, you know, computer guy.
Nerd.
Geek. I think they, I don't
geek.
Know what they call them.
No, it's not called geek anymore.
It's not.
It's called a dwerk.
Okay.
Matt, you have baby kids. What are they
I don't know yet.
Dwerks?
They're 7
Dwerks.
And 9. I'm not sure.
Dwerks.
I have no idea.
Okay, now you have to watch the screen because these are all the files associated with the rate model. And what we have is a whole bunch of different billing periods, and those have all the customer accounts associated with them and what their actual consumption. And the bottom one is the drought model master, and that's the one where we work with the different tiers in order to get the whole thing to work. And of course, it's on a laptop, so I always worry whether or not this little buzz thing's going to work. But there it goes. This is it uploading. It's kind of like driving a car really, a motorcycle fast. So that's what I like to do. But.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is. This is exciting. And no, it's not going to work. Oh, there it goes. It even works.
Internet adrenaline.
Yeah. So what this sheet that you're seeing right now does, and I'm going to modify it slightly for the screen, little bit too small, is that we have the ability, and we won't go through the excruciating details tonight, but this is set up so that in this area right here is where we have our rate structure. So this is what it currently is. And we have, a little bit hard to read, but there's hard copies too, is through July of 2014, our base rate was $43.44 every 2 months. And after July, it became $44.70. And then we don't charge anything for consumption within the base rate here. We do charge $1.14 for every unit consumed for Lopez. But after the base rate, then, it's $2.25 for all units between 7 and 25, and everything over 25 is about $2.95. And then there's a little surcharge for the Arroyo Grande customers we serve, and then over here is the charges associated with hydrant meters. But following Vice President White's comments is that, so I have it set up so that we can go with five different tiers. And my general observation is that, you know, to go from 7 to 25 units all within one tier, that's a really, really large tier. So I've run a couple of different scenarios, again, not getting into the details tonight, where I went with a tier that was from 0 to 6, then 6 to 12, 12 to 18, 18 to 24, and kind of jumped them up in six-unit increments. You could reduce the base rate from 6 units down to 4 units. 4 units is essentially 50 gallons per capita per day for a single occupied residence. But right now, I would not recommend changing the units in the base tier. I would keep it with 6. And here's my thought is that when the rate increase went into effect in 2011, essentially everybody who's in that base tier has paid the dollars that was being anticipated. Because in the base tier, if you don't use it, you still pay the base rate. The revenue shortfall has really occurred up in the tiers. And so I wouldn't modify the base tier, at least for the revenue adjustment for the 2011-1 ordinance. In order to come up with the shortfall, I would be focusing on tiers, and whether it's 4 tiers or 5 tiers, I definitely think the number of tiers should be increased. And obviously I developed a model with 5 tiers because, you know, that's not uncommon. With respect to the 3-4% increment that your board was talking about on the revenue target, I think some of that should come in the base rate, as well as some of it should come in the tiers. Because even base rate, but if the base rate individuals are paying approximately $50 every 2 months, a little bit more right now, well, even a 4% increase is $2 every 2 months or $1 a month. So that percentage increase on the base tier is not a big dollar amount. So in terms of that 3 or 4%, I think that should be spread between the base tier and the other tiers. But with respect to the results of the shortfall because of conservation and the need to continue to encourage conservation, I would be more inclined to recommend working with the tier structure in that. And, you know, Vice President White had put out the idea of work it with 5 different tiers.
I would agree with that. I think
it will help. Who uses 10?
I know I talk too quietly. I was just saying, I think it's more rewarding for people who are conserving if the tier ranges are smaller. So I would agree with Vice President White.
Who uses 9,999?
Oh, no, that's okay. So what I do, I put in 9,999 on that rate structure because basically that takes the, it means that tier is not being used. So when I go from, if you see tier 3 right here on the chart, and I will blow this one up just to focus in on here. So here's our current rate structure. So again, base rate was $43.44, and on July it went up to $44.70. And you have no additional charges for units 0 to 6. The next tier is 7 to 25 units. And then the next tier is basically 26 to infinity. So instead of putting infinity in there, I just put in 9,999 because nobody uses that much water. But that's the way that I program the computer to say anybody who uses more than 25 units, all those additional units are at $2.95. So we have to tell the computer something, and it doesn't recognize infinity. So I just picked a large number, 9,999. Nobody does. We've had a few that, I mean, there's 700 and some units for some of the large, like mobile home parks and stuff like that. So I don't think we have anybody who's consuming more than 1,000 units, though. So that's just a way of creating an upward parameter on a computer program to make the rate structures work.
And Mr. Guerrero?
Yes.
Having being a large water consumer in one of your businesses, mm-hmm. What is the average for your business?
Our bills?
I'm not going to ask your personal question like that. I'm just wondering.
I don't know the number. I know the amount. I know the amount of the bill, but I don't know the number of units. I don't know that. I could have looked, but I didn't think to do that.
So, like, thinking of the ice company and packing the yard, you know, and stuff, is to how many units really go with those entities?
It's all over the board. You know, we've got some commercial units that use a lot of water, and other commercial operations don't use a lot of water. So the nice thing about the model is that I get to plug in variables like this, and then it goes through and it calculates it for everybody, and there's no, you know, it would be really, yeah, there's no looking at the individual accounts and saying, oh, how does it affect that one or this one? You just go in there and, you know, work with these very simple variables.
You know, it's so refreshing to see somebody excited about this stuff. we've had to beg for reports, and here you are just loving your graphs, and they're accurate. That's
stolen. The big water users would be just commercial stuff. There's
most
no
likely
agricultural operations that are on.
Yeah, I didn't. Celia, yeah, I don't know of any. Yeah, there's no growers on there. I think our bigger non-residential, like, would be the RV park. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be a non-commercial.
And I don't know if schools. Yeah.
Oh, schools. I forgot about those. Yeah. Okay. No, I just was trying to figure out these rate increases go. Who
and
they
one of the buy. Ways that they pay more also is because if they have a 2-inch or a 4-inch or a 6-inch meter, their base rates are actually higher than this, right? This is residential. Mm-hmm. Now, what the model does in the details, like on this sheet, these sheets down here will take every customer and it will identify what the meter size is, and if they're commercial, it does all those calculations. So those are all embedded in there. But non-residential or commercial, they do have to pay for larger meters, and that's one of the ways that.
Okay.
The rationale for that also is because with the larger meters, they place a higher instantaneous demand on us, like for fire and other types of service. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I want to kind of make as a note is that in this one, I like for this plan to stay relatively simple. You know, moving from base rates to tiered rates is fine. If next year, when we're looking at the long-term plan, if there's any other types of bigger adjustments to the rate structure, I think those would be appropriate at that point in time. I haven't run statistics on things like how many people are paying in the base rate, how many people are paying, you know, in different tiers. We can do those normal curves and do all sorts of additional statistical analysis. But that's really would be more appropriate for a year from now. I guess
a new computer program for you.
It's the same one. I'll just run more statistics off of it. The other thing is I do think that when we come back, there's a couple of minor things that we should, relatively minor, but important to certain people. Right now, we don't have the authority to waive late fees or door hanger fees for anybody. And one of the recommendations I'll have coming back on the details is that if somebody's been in good credit history and they've been in good standing for like 2 years and something happens and they're late, you know, if we're in good standing with our credit card companies and we're late, you know, they often, you call them up and they'll say, you've been good credit, we'll waive the the late fee this time. We don't have that authority at the staff level to do that right now. We have certain authorities on what we can do in working with the customers, but it's pretty limited. So I would like to see, you know, to have that authority if somebody's been in good standing, or if they're in a hardship situation, that we would be able to, you know, work with them a little bit better on a payment plan than what we currently do. So that's one thing on a detail that I'll bring back. And then the second thing on a detail is that our fog program right now doesn't cover its costs. And I did look back at the minutes, and there was some discussion about, you know, trying to help the businesses not have to pay the full cost about the fog program. And I can understand the sentiment, but if the businesses aren't paying for it, then the residences are paying for it. So I think we really have to come back and make sure that that fog program covers its costs as well. And I don't think that's technically a Prop 218 issue, but it's cleaner just to include it in the Prop 218 process. Not all of the fees that you charge are subject to Prop 218. The imposition of property of new development fees, like connection charges and those things, those are carved out of Prop 218. So you have some fees that don't require Prop 218. There's other propositions you have to cover. You know, you've got to do other analysis to comply with the law. But as long as we're going through the Prop 218 process, I think it's just clean to incorporate them into them and then move forward.
Let me ask you, Mr. Ogren, you mentioned a door hanger forgiveness program, and so would that just be that we would write that up in the ordinances and then have the board discuss it and have a public hearing and then...
I think so.
Does
so
it go into the 218 application is what I'm asking.
So if we incorporate it into the ordinance... then it's going to be part of the 218 process.
Okay. And now I'm going to ask another hard question, and it's probably not appropriate since we're talking about, like, you know, not having enough money to pay for everything as we got it now. But I think many times of the nonprofits in the area, and we don't really have a rate for nonprofits. And I don't know if it's appropriate or not appropriate, but I wanted to put it out there and. Maybe we can bring it up at a future date that we talk about different tiers and stuff like that. And we talk about wanting to support our social service programs and stuff. But really the way you support it is to give them a rate.
So in response to that particular question, one is I'd say that that's a more highly complicated issue than we're addressing right now. So I would say... we can address that over the year's time when we come back in a year from now.
Okay.
In general, we're refrained from doing special rate structures for nonprofits and stuff because Prop 218 is sort of the based on cost of services provided and benefits, mm-hmm. depending on what we're doing. And the ability to do something just because it's a socially good thing is pretty thin. Now, special taxes, which require two-thirds voter approval, you have much. It's much more liberal on how you, what you do with that special tax money, but that requires two-thirds registered voter approval. So, for example, if you said we want to collect some money so that we can help to pay for the costs associated with nonprofits, I'm inclined to believe that that would require a two-thirds registered voter approval to do that.
So we'll put that on the agenda for the future.
Yes. It's a good question, but it's a much more complicated, and I think it's for the long-term plan.
Okay, great. Thank you for answering that for me. Does anybody else have any questions regarding the 218 process and the recommendations that we've given the fiscal committee and staff to move forward?
And
have we given him the recommendation of a five-tier system for this year
and look at between 3-4%,
right?
How to best get to between 3-4% increase.
3%.
Yeah. 3-4% between 3% and 4%.
I said 3%.
Right. You said 3%, yeah. And I also heard 4%.
I said 3-4, but 3 is fine.
Okay.
3 is fine. Then.
I mean,
I just
three
think
or four.
We should look between 3-4%.
I think we should just go for 1 because
okay.
time and, I mean, going to the Finance Committee then has to come back. It's more cumbersome. And the third thing, the water,
but
water
yes,
conservation.
But we don't
target.
Know if 3% is going to be enough.
Right.
So if we say to only look to 3%, we're not quite sure that's going to cover it. So that's why I say between 3% and 4%.
And I can work with that kind of direction with the Finance Committee and then come back with a specific recommendation.
Okay.
And the reason why I like the 3% to 4% range is because on these commercial meter charges that we've been auditing, and we don't know the conclusion on that, if in fact we're going to generate more revenue just to correct for that prior error, then maybe that would warrant 3, but I guess, I don't know. So we've got some more detailed work, and we'll work with the Finance Committee, and maybe we'll come back with exactly 3.5 or something. But if I have that range to work with, I think we can develop some good final recommendations.
Okay.
And you're okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'd love for you to come back 1.5%.
Well, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Similarly, on the second policy, how should rates be adjusted? So base rates versus tiered rates, what I'm hearing the board say is, let's go with a 5-tier structure. The second question of, for the COLA or the increment for 2015-16, that 3% to 4% range, I think that there should be some of that in the base rate, you know, a couple percent in the base rate, with sort of take that increment and apportion it between the base rate and the tiers. The revenue shortfall that we're dealing with in the 5-tier structure, and then this 3% to 4% increment, kind of both base rates and in the 5 tiers.
Okay. And I suppose if the governor says 20%, your third issue there.
Yeah. You know, obviously Oceano, with the acquisition of State Water and Lopez Water and some groundwater pumping rights, we're still in a better situation than some of our neighboring communities. But even with that said, it's uncomfortable. State Water was at a 5% delivery last year. It's at a 15% delivery this year. We're relying on county's excess allocation of State Water for some of that. The LRRP, the Low Reservoir Response Plan, was adopted for Lopez, and that's some good drought strategies and everything. But groundwater levels are down, and I think that doing anything short of the governor's target would really create a little bit of suspicion in the eyes of others, especially if we're working with the county and our NCMA agencies, and then we turn around and we adopt something less than 20%. I think that the benefit right now of where we're at is that with adopting a 20% conservation factor and adjusting the rates accordingly, we're not yet at the same place that other communities are at with the imposition of penalties if you don't meet quotas. You know, if the drought continues another year and we're here this time next year, well, I think we would be facing the issue of quotas and penalties if people don't meet that. But by making that rate adjustment, we are essentially saying, look, we're mandating conservation right now, because if you don't conserve, you're going to be paying higher rates. And again, I like the policy of if somebody uses extra water, they don't get penalized this year, but that extra money that's generated goes into an incentive program for water conservation, and then whatever money is generated, we can help with toilet retrofits and giving rebates or something like that.
I have a question. Do we need two target revenues? The second one being for the new normal? Or is that something?
No. So the target of the new normal would be your $2,016,000 plus your 3% to 4%.
Okay, it would be the same.
Yeah, that's your new normal.
Okay.
And then we'll create two different rate structures, one which is the new normal, assuming normal consumption, and then a rate structure that says this is based on 20% conservation.
Okay, that makes sense.
And the important point there then is that when the drought is over, there will be an official trigger to drop from the drought structure back to the new normal structure. And my general recommendation on that is that when the drought is declared over, And at the sooner of either the Board of Supervisors declaring it over or if your board declares it over sooner. And the reason why I think that's a good motion is that I think that the Board of Supervisors is going to be relatively conservative, especially for the Five Cities area and the Lopez operations, because we know that some of our neighboring communities are more stressed than we are. So they might keep it in effect for longer, but your board might determine that, you know, state water is flowing or our water situation is better, and you might declare it over quicker for Oceano in order to go back and, you know, get off the drought rate structure and go into the new normal. So when we have two rate structures, we have to identify in the ordinance when we're going to drop the one and go back to the lower rate structure, the new normal. And my basic recommendation is going to be at the sooner point of either the Board of Supervisors declaring the drought over or if you do so sooner.
And then we are still talking about including the Lopez pass-through costs or the surface water pass-through costs in the drought ordinance, or is that the next time?
I would do it in the drought ordinance. Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure. And it's possible, although I'll have to check with you to make sure, that the 2011-1 possibly wasn't implemented for Lopez. I don't know. I found a sheet in one of the minutes of one of the meetings from 2010. So what was the question?
I will compliment Director Blackburn and her role as the chair of the Finance Committee, because I went back and I took out all the minutes, you know, doing my research back in 2011. And, okay, I like computer programs, but Director Blackburn likes to read.
I like paper.
So she scoured through it, and I definitely appreciate. Let's follow up and see if you saw something there that that we need to take into consideration.
Yeah, it is nice having someone on the board who actually operates like the board fiscal agent, you know.
Yeah.
It's nice. I've worked that way before.
Director Blackburn also went to her harassment prevention training last
week. That's right. So. I forgot to mention that.
And you know how much she likes to harass people.
Yeah. Very enlightening.
Okay, great. Glad to hear you went to your harassment program.
Real quick recap on the initial policy direction. First bullet is the ordinance 2011-1 plus 3-4%, working out the details with the Finance Committee. On the second, on how should the rate structures be adjusted, in terms of the revenue shortfalls, we're going to go to a five-tier structure, and revenue shortfalls are going to be focused in on the tiers. In terms of this increment for 2015-16, it's going to kind of be between both base and tiers. And then the 20% governor's declaration for the drought conservation is what we'll go for on our conservation calculations.
Do you know what conservation percentage we're at right now?
I think in the staff report I quoted it. But, again, just like the revenue shortfall, those numbers are going to be subject to our final auditing work.
Yeah. It was right around 15%, wasn't it?
I think we were looking at maybe upwards of maybe 11%, but maybe lower depending on our final conclusion and the audits and stuff.
But still, for not really, for just doing regular public, announcements and stuff like that regarding the drought and conserve and shower with a bucket in the bottom of the shower and stuff. I mean, I'm really shocked and amazed at how the community has, just kicked into gear and, even I turned the sprinklers off and lots of people, and I haven't seen any water running down the street.
Well, and this is the graph that tells that tale, right? Because even though this is a revenue graph, those revenues have a direct relationship to consumption. It's not, one-to-one, but there's a direct relationship. So when we see these different blue bars from the prior year, and then we see these red ones dropping, that shows the community's conservation efforts. Now, what the heck is this big red one here?
I know.
And you know?
Yeah, I do.
What is it?
It did not rain in January or February that year.
Yeah, last year. That's sort of what my inclination is. And again, Celia and I are double-checking these numbers. But this was, you know, basically Christmas time a year ago, before the governor declared the emergency.
Yeah.
It's not raining, and people want to keep their landscaping alive.
Yeah.
So you had a lot of wintertime consumption you wouldn't ever normally have, but then the community responded as soon as the governor declared the emergency. And again, I think the community response has been really good.
I agree. We rock. But we keep telling them that. They just don't listen.
Town rocks.
Okay, moving right along. It is
8:39.
Thanks. New glasses time.
Break time.
Okay, 8:39. Do you think that we could do the rest of the agenda in 5 minutes?
Maybe 10.
I think we could do it in 5 or 10 because it's just the zone 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just have to take a vote on adoption of the zone 3 budget.
We should double check to see if there's any.
Oh, wait. We were going to ask if there was public comment.
Public comment.
Yes.
Look, guys, who's going to facilitate here?
We're just helping.
We're just reminding.
Just helping, Mary, just helping.
We just heard.
Which would be the staff report.
So you're asking for a public comment on 10A?
That's right. So, would you like to comment on 10A?
I'm very satisfied.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Tony, is there anything that you'd like to comment on or add? Or?
I'm good.
Okay. And last but not least, AGP, is there anything? Okay, so thank you very much for that detailed explanation, Pavel. I think it helps everybody, including myself, to understand the 218 process clearer. And I think we're able to go out to the community and answer questions honestly. So on that note.
I just want to say that
I rarely understood this. I understood this whole program you gave, and I've never been able to understand anything given before, so I'm really, really pleased and impressed with what's going on. So
Thanks. I know I understood it, too. Okay, on that note, we're going to consider the Zone 3 budget, their annual budget. All of us have most of us probably reviewed it, got comments on it, and staff's recommendation would be to...
Endorse
and support the Zone 3. I'll entertain a motion. Any discussion first?
Well, we can't forget about public comment, but there's just one thing I want to point out. This is a 30-second staff report. So that's actually two things, and I just lost half of my 30 seconds. But
that's right. Go get a pet.
The increases to Oceano are just over between 2 and 2.5%. The primary reason for the increase is that the county, after 7 years of a recession, has done cost of living adjustments. They provided a 2.5% increase in salaries this year, and also adopted a 2.5% increase in salaries next year. There's also an increase in water quality costs. So that's the basis for the increase. Other than that, it's pretty much a status quo budget. The other thing I want to point out is on page 19 of 23. And this is the debt service schedule. And it shows a unique line item for Oceano Community Services District loan. And that's because when the refinancing of the Zone 3 bonds happened several years ago, Oceano wasn't complying with the financial conditions and could not participate. And so as a result, we still pay a higher interest rate, and the other agencies got a decline. And that was a direct result of not having the rates adequate to comply with the bond covenants.
I think we also had an issue because our audits were not done at that time, and so we couldn't get into the finance procedures.
Right.
Right.
And the only point I really want to make here is that when we're not doing what we should do, it ends up costing us in one way or another, and there is a cost. Now, it's not a huge cost on the Zone 3, but it's a difference in interest rates and stuff, and it's called out in the Zone 3.
What is the rate on that? on that debt?
I'm not exactly sure, but they're running 4% roughly.
So if we refied, we could actually get in probably right about 1.7.
Not based on market conditions. You know,
well,
those type of interest
on
rates.
A real lender.
Well, when we look at lending from the State Water Board or from USDA, then those types of interest rates we can pursue. Mm-hmm. But when it's on the financial markets are more in the 4 to 5% range.
Okay.
So
we'll go back and look at that debt. That sustain or that carried
right.
over debt at a later date. But yeah. get us make a footnote and put that on. So I'd entertain a motion to adopt.
Public comment.
So Todd, afterward.
Okay, does anybody want to give public comment on the exciting Zone 3 annual budget? Hearing none.
I'll move to approve staff recommendation.
Second.
Wait a minute. Who seconded?
She did.
She did. Jennifer did?
Ms.
Yes.
Director
okay.
Blackburn.
Director Blackburn.
Okay. Roll call vote.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes. It's approved.
Passed.
5-0. Okay, any hearing items? Hearing
none.
Okay, utility items?
None.
Hearing none. No closed session. That's a good sign. That means there's minimal litigation. You know, that was my platform when I ran for office for this, when I ran for this seat. I promised never to sue the residents of Oceano. So when I see closed session with none, it makes me a happy woman. Okay.
Late received. Oh, no, this is received. Sorry.
Received.
Okay, so you want to do the agenda?
Go on. I'm sorry.
No written communication, correct?
Correct. Just
future agenda items.
Oh no, we do no 14, but on 15, Council Minery just handed out late received written communications. I'm going to note real quickly that we also have other communications that come through. If they're not specifically germane to a possible agenda item, then I don't bring them here. We just make photocopies and put them in your inbox for general informational purposes. But this correspondence that we did receive yesterday is very much relevant to agenda items. And just to summarize it real quickly is that in our joint defense agreement with Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach on the Santa Maria groundwater litigation, we did receive notice from the city of Grover Beach that they will be withdrawing from that joint defense agreement. So they will no longer be using Henry Weinstock. The two agencies that still remain then, because Pismo Beach has already withdrawn, is us and Arroyo Grande. So we'll have to talk with Arroyo Grande, and we're going to have to make some upcoming determinations at a future agenda on legal representation associated with that. As we know that the judge denied LOG's recent motion, so we don't really have any pending litigation right now on it. There is a case management conference in March. But in any case, this is Grover's official notification that they are withdrawing from the joint defense agreement. And our procedure now on this late written communication is that we will incorporate it. We will post preliminary actions of your board today, and we post all the late received communications on the website. So we'll be doing that in the next day or two.
Okay. Let me just ask one quick question on this one. Is I know that other collaborations that we have, if one or more of the parties is to withdraw from the collaboration, there's a timeline that's set in place. And on the Northern Cities Groundwater Basin Group, otherwise known as the Gentleman's Agreement, is there a timeline on change in structure in that agreement? Can we look and just see?
Yeah, we can look into
that. Because I know that, like, for example, the Five Cities Fire Authority, you know, one of the entities can pull out, but there's a certain amount, you know, like I think it's like 15 months or something. I don't know exactly.
So we can check both the gentleman's agreement. We can check the joint defense. Yeah.
If there's a timeline.
Yeah.
You know, I support them doing whatever they want to do, so long as it creates no harm to us. But I do like to follow contracts and do it the way that things were intended.
Right, and I think, President Lucy, that one thing we also want to understand to bring for the board is how this would impact just the finances of how Henry Weinstock would be getting paid or any other legal counsel if you would choose to remain in a partnership at all in handling or monitoring the situation there. So we'll bring that information to you.
And then maybe somebody could just, I just gently let Grover Beach know how to spell our general manager's name.
Okay, Pabo.
It's happened note, many times.
I know.
Well, there was, I'm sorry, were there other questions on that? Because I had asked that the, we received information for the Marine Life Sanctuary proposal.
So that one we have distributed in your inboxes.
Okay.
That proposal really isn't specifically a part of the jurisdiction of the CSD. Obviously.
But we could write a letter of support or against it if we decided.
Right. So on the issues that I bring forward, the communications, and then we post them to the website, those are the items that really directly relate to district business mm-hmm. and possible future agenda items. But it's other things like, I think it's the Chumash's proposal for a marine the extension of the Marine Sanctuary.
Right.
So that information we copied and we put into all the directors' inboxes.
Is that the one with that has the big octopus?
I don't know.
The Morro Bay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So this late received letter from Grover Beach will go on a future agenda?
No.
Not the letter, but the question of, yes, the issue of our future legal representation on the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin will. And then if your board wants to address some of these other sort of issues that are important for the community, even if they're not technically within the jurisdiction of the agency, because they have a community involvement, then I just need to hear from the board members that you would want to talk about any of those particular issues.
Okay. And on that, go ahead.
The only one I had from tonight's meeting was the will serve letters.
Yeah.
Right. And so we'll address the policies on that on a future agenda.
Is there
agenda.
Any effort being made to maybe forward some of this stuff like the Chumash thing and those things also to the Oceano Advisory Committee? Because some of that stuff is relevant to them if it's not relevant to us.
Yeah, and where I will certainly, I'll look for a little bit of help for the representatives who are on the Oceano Advisory Committee.
Just forward it to the secretary, I think.
Well, what I'm saying is that if you see stuff in your inbox that we're forwarding to you and you sit on the Oceano Advisory Committee and you want to make sure that they get it, just let us know.
Okay.
And that will be the trigger to tell us to forward it to the advisory committee.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Okay, moving it along, future agenda items.
The policy discussion on will serve letters, and we'll bring back an item to discuss
okay,
that.
And we were considering a special meeting in March, at the beginning of March, for the 218.
So we will play that one by ear a little bit. We'll see if we can get it on the February 25th agenda. If we can't make that timing, then on February 25th, we'll talk about the date for a special meeting. I think on a preliminary basis, what we should probably do is some outreach that if we do need to have a meeting in the first week of March, we start talking about when that might be. And so I'll look to Marie and Celia to help with those communications with individual board members. And then again, if we need to have it, then we'll firm it up on February 25th.
Okay, great. And then, all right, so future hearing items would just be the progress of 218?
Yeah, and at the last meeting, we established some future hearing items for the sanitary sewer management plan. So those are already on schedule. And
all right. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to close with or offer? No? Okay. The community can keep in mind pancakes, fresh sausages, great company at the depot on the 22nd.
Supporting a good cause.
All you can eat, $5 for our kids locally. All little you can eat?
No, I just wanted to make one announcement, too.
Only one?
Just one. After the pancake breakfast discussed.
Okay, so pancake breakfast. Okay, Mr.
So,
Ogrin.
And, you know, Mario did his presentation on some of the work that he's been doing on clean and green and community mm-hmm. cleanup. And so in the 6 months or so that I've been on board now, we've been looking at staff adjustments and assignments. And Celia is here tonight, sort of her one-shot training, and she'll be taking over on board secretary duties.
Oh,
Marie is going to be helping me focus in on some of our quality control procedures and the internal reconciliations so that we can start moving forward on you know, some of the details of the office management and reconciliation. So we're making some adjustments in duties. That's why Celia is here today, and where Marie is going to be helping me focus on some of those internal business practices and what we're doing.
Okay. Thank you, Marie, for your service and welcome, Celia.
Yeah, thank you, Marie.
You got jumped in. You crash course here. So.
And I have one more announcement to make. We have a new Board of Supervisor, Lynn Compton. I've spent some time with her. I adore this woman. I think she is just smart as a whip, and I love smart women. So, I do like smart people. She comes to Oceano on Thursdays. I really strongly recommend people make an appointment with her, get to know her, meet her, because I think she really does care about our area. And so on that note, I'll entertain a motion. If there's nothing else to add, to adjourn.
So made.
So move.
We out of here. Good night, everybody. Good night.